Welcome to Games We Grew Up With, a podcast that relies on nostalgia and a geeky sensibility. Each episode, we'll talk about one of the video games that left an impression on us as kids, put on some rose-tinted glasses and reminisce about it, then replay the game and see how it's held up over the years. This episode, we'll be riding our Yoshis into battle and talking about Super Mario World for the SNES. I'm Chris.
And I'm Katie.
We finally found the secret exit, so let's kick it off.
Let's go.
I almost changed that intro to using our Yoshi to get an extra jump and dump him into a hole.
How dare you, sir? How dare you, sir?
So we are in Mario Month. We celebrated Mario Day with Super Mario RPG, the remake.
If you didn't hear that episode, look for it.
Yes, it was a ton of fun. More fun than this one, in my opinion. But also a weird transition, honestly.
Yes.
Going from that to this. But
yes.
Here we are talking about Super Mario World.
Yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully everyone, yeah, if you didn't catch the Rose episode, go ahead and go back in your feed, catch the non-Rose episode, I should say, for the Super
yes.
Mario RPG. You should also go back and listen to the original version of that episode when we tried to play the original game and we didn't know what we were doing in the podcast, so it was a hot mess. So it's entertaining to hear us from then.
Yeah, episode 5, it was wild. That was a wild re-listen.
Yes. So it's time to continue Mario Month. Before we can get into the meat of the game, though, it's time for our video game trope of the day.
Trope of the day!
Day, day.
Yahoo!
Day.
So, Katie, what is our trope of the day?
So, today's trope is one of our cheaties. It's more of a, type of gameplay than trope, but whatever. It's auto-scrolling levels.
It's a mechanic.
It's
a mechanic, but that's still a trope. That's video game trope.
Yes. It's auto-scrolling levels. Chris,
yes.
Tell me about auto-scrolling levels.
So, you see this a ton in Mario games. It's where the level is scrolling itself as opposed to you moving along, because there's certain things like the old school Mario games, you couldn't go backwards, right? You could go forwards, couldn't go back. This is when the game just moves for you,
mm-hmm.
and you have to move with the level, and it can vary. Sometimes if the back of the level hits you, you'll die,
yeah.
or it just sweeps you along with it, which means you'll probably die. But you see this so much in Mario.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing with this mechanic that it doesn't just affect slower players. It affects fast players, too, because you can't make it go faster.
Because you can't go forward. Yeah, that's a good point.
So you have to pace yourself with
yeah.
the level, which I think is a really interesting. It affects both ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, and this is really when we're talking about auto-scrolling, we're going to be really addressing just the platforming side of things, just because other games like rail shooters auto scroll, but that's how they're meant to play.
Well, that's the core mechanic of the game.
This is where it's like a certain level will have this mechanic pop up, but it's not consistent throughout the whole game.
Yeah, I feel like you see it in boss levels more often than not, especially in a lot of the obviously side scrollers, but
it happens.
I feel like a lot of the times it's boss levels.
It's like to add that tension. I find it really interesting that, at least as far as I could tell from what I researched, the first time that a platformer had auto scrolling was in Super Mario Brothers 3. They had a lot of them, actually. They brought it into that game, but specifically mm-hmm. the airship levels always had them. And
yeah.
I think it's so interesting because that has stayed consistent for Mario games ever since. Airship levels are always auto-scrolling.
Are auto-scrolling, yeah. That's.
Yeah, and Mario Super Mario Brothers 3 was the very first platforming game, as far as I know, could tell, ever to have auto-scrolling levels, because they took the idea from the rail shooters. They saw that and was like, can we apply this to platforming? And so they did. So that's kind of really cool. And I think that's why it's such a core part of Mario platforming games.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just not even just 2D platformers, because Super Mario 3D World, there are levels that auto-scroll.
Yeah, I feel like it's more boss levels.
There's a clip on our YouTube channel, I believe, of us absolutely failing at Super Mario 3 because it's an auto-scrolling level and the four of us are just panicking as we're jumping along and it's a hot mess. I don't know if it was a boss level, but it definitely was a hot mess of a level because it was auto-scrolling.
Gunstar Heroes, when you're sliding down the pyramid.
Yeah.
That's kind of an auto-scrolling because we did the cheaty thing where you like hide off the back of the screen.
Yes, yes.
So the enemies can't hurt you.
Yeah, so that
because
that
they let you
it.
Get away with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, even in non-Mario platforming games, Mario Party games, there's mini games that have this aspect in it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the runaway from the cheap.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the mini games have that.
And then, just again, this is so common in platformers. Sonic the Hedgehog has levels like this. Again, boss-type levels in Sonic, later Sonic games. Not in the early ones. It was in Sonic 3 and like Sonic and Knuckles, like some of the later Sonics.
Yeah.
And brought that in.
And I think some of the earlier ones and the boss stuff would slide.
They'd slide. You'd have to go to certain areas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
one of the interesting ones I found, which neither Chris or I experienced, was Echo the Dolphin. Because we didn't get far enough. It's the level before the final boss. So neither of us got even close to this. But there's a forced scroll maze, which is just brutal to me. It makes you go up or down. You have to follow where the screen is pushing you through a maze. And it's at least 5 minutes long.
That sounds like a nightmare.
It sounds
awful. I always remember about Echo where they made it hard so you couldn't beat it on one rental.
Uh-huh.
Which was like, you know what? I appreciate that.
But also,
I mean, I don't want to play
that. That sounds brutal.
Yeah.
One of my other favorite auto-scrollers, it's both the old and the new version, is the original Rayman game. Had a lot of these auto-scrolling levels because it's a, you know, old school platformer for the PlayStation.
Yeah.
But Rayman Origins and Rayman Legends, which came out, I think, on the PS3 and PS4, so we're basically throwbacks to those original Rayman games. They kind of, because Rayman had, like a lot of those franchises have moved away and were more action-adventure, whatever. The Rayman Origins and Legends went back to that 2D scrolling kind of thing, and they had auto-scroll levels, but specifically those, I really like them because most of the auto-scrolling levels were either challenge levels where you're supposed to sprint the whole time, or they were these music levels where you hit certain things and it played a song as you're going, so you had to stay on the rhythm, and it was an auto-scrolling. It was just it was a very fun auto-scroll, and I really, really liked that. So yeah, it's just those kind of games where you're just forced to run, basically. You don't get time to think on auto-scrollers a lot of times.
Oh, Jak and Daxter had a couple mini-segments where you're essentially being chased by something.
True, like the spider.
Yeah, the spider or the not dragon. There were a couple
where you had to run.
Yeah, and they were stressful as hell.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like, that's not quite officially an auto-scroller, but it absolutely has that same idea.
No, it's slightly different.
You have to run or death will get you. No, it's absolutely applicable. You know, like Chris said, it's sometimes auto-scrollers are just, you get pushed along the screen until, like, if you get caught by the back. A lot of times, I feel like it's like that flame wall that's chasing you. I feel like that's a really common way of doing it. There's just a flame. So, it, you know, that doesn't stress people out at all. Not at all.
Nope, not at all.
But it's stressful, but it is a core mechanic of Mario games, I feel like, at this point.
At least in a handful of parts, yeah. Like, it is a staple somewhere in the game.
It would be weird if you had a Mario platformer, not like Galaxy or Odyssey. Those are a little bit different.
Yeah.
But if you had, like, the traditional, like, the 3D world, the Mario Wonder, if there wasn't an auto-scroll level, it would be weird, I feel like.
Yeah.
Which is why auto-scrolling levels is today's video game trope of the day.
Trope of the day!
Are you trying to scroll yourself?
I guess. Back and forth, yes. I guess that would have been.
That's probably better.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
All right, so it is time to talk about the game of the episode. Katie, what can you tell me about Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System?
So Super Mario World is a platformer, as we said, that was developed
Surprise!
that was developed by Nintendo EAD. I forget what that stands for, but that's their developmental arm at the time. In 1990 for Japan, for the Super Famicom. That was the Japanese name for the SNES. And so the game came out in North America in 1991. It was a launch title for the Famicom, the Super Famicom, as well as the Super Nintendo, along with F-Zero, which we already covered on the podcast. Go listen to the episode.
GWGW show. Just in case you didn't know what you're listening to.
Just in case. God, that'd be bad. Because it's a launch title and this really pulls into the development of this game. I wanted to go into a couple of things of the history of the Super Nintendo itself.
Yeah.
It's a 16-bit system, which was revolutionary at the time, mm-hmm. but it wasn't revolutionary. It was revolutionary for Nintendo. Nintendo was not the first to come out with a 16-bit system. In fact, it was the third major console to come out as a 16-bit system. The first two being the PC Engine / TurboGrafx, which was what Super Bonk originated on. Another episode you should go back to. Because nobody listened to Super Bonk.
One of my favorite moments.
Oh, shut up. And the Sega Genesis as well were both 16-bit systems that came out in the late 80s. I believe it was 87 and 88 for those two systems. Whereas, again, the Super Nintendo didn't come out till 1990. So there was actually a bit of a gap. The Sega wasn't selling well at the time, but it was out there and it was competition. Nintendo was far more worried about the PC Engine at the time, which is why when they announced that they were developing the SNES, they did it right before the launch of the PC Engine to be like, hey, Nintendo fans, don't buy that. Just wait for ours. Hey.
Yay.
Like, they purposefully did it. And even though it ended up being about a 3-year wait, it actually wasn't intended to. The system was supposed to come out around 1989, but Nintendo ended up having to delay the Super Nintendo for a couple reasons. The biggest reason being there was a microchip shortage worldwide. So they were struggling to get enough chips to even do the NES, which was still selling hotcakes at the time. So they didn't even have enough microchips to develop the NESs and the Game Boys, which had just come out. So they're like, we don't have enough to also do a brand new system.
Yeah.
But beyond
that, that's fascinating.
Because the SNES had a brand new engine, developers needed new developer kits, and they didn't give them out to enough people, even though all of these people committed to making games for the SNES. So when they were originally supposed to get ready for launch, there were like no games ready for the SNES. So they delayed it by a year.
That's what was that the Sega CD didn't do. They launched with like 6 titles and completely fell on their face. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And Nintendo realized this was before the Sega CD, but they realized they needed more titles. And so for various reasons, they decided to delay for another year. Now, Super Mario World was originally announced as Super Mario Brothers 4, because it is the next one in the series. It's a direct sequel, in theory, to Super Mario Brothers 3. And it was announced in 1987, along with the announcement for the SNES. Just a very vague, like, we're doing another Mario Brothers game, which, you know, makes sense. I think it's really interesting. The developers, because they never worked in this software before, because, again, it was brand new, didn't exist before.
Yeah.
They had to practice, specifically because for Super Mario Brothers 1 through 3, when they built out levels, they hand graphed them, like on graph paper. They drew it out paper first.
I love that so much.
It's like, so cool. And then they would take that and put it into the computer. But with Super Mario World, it was the first game that they wanted to develop directly into the software.
Uh-huh.
And so to learn the software, that the new software they were working on, they rebuilt Super Mario Brothers 3 into the SNES software to basically
practice. It's amazing where it's like they had to learn how to use. I mean, that's how game development works, right? Like, they've got the new engine. They've got to play in the new engine.
Right. But they also knew that they were going to be a launch game from the start. So not only did they need to play in it, they needed to use as many pieces of it as possible. Because whenever you get launch
titles, this was their showcase of the new technology.
That's a great way of putting it. It's a showcase. And so they built it, Super Mario Brothers 3, in the new engine. What's the other reason that worked really well for them, of the 16 members of their development team, which, again, baffling, just 16 members, 9 of them were people who had worked on Super Mario Brothers 3. So they just, it's that whole consistency Nintendo really tapping.
That continuity is incredibly helpful.
Keeping people down the line. So
Since Miyamoto was busy, I think, working on actual Super Nintendo stuff.
Correct.
So he wasn't there a ton.
It's the first Mario game he didn't direct himself. He was busy. They took him to be like, you need to do everything on the SNES. Like, you need to be worrying about the system as a whole. So Takeshi Tezuka ended up being the director. Now, he was the co-director on Super Mario Brothers 3, and he had assistant directed the other two games. So he was very familiar with Mario. He is one of the originators of Mario. But it was the first time he was directing by himself.
Which and is, so, it seems like a lot of pressure, right? Like
it is. And it's really interesting because on the preview, on Super Mario Brothers 3, he had other roles where he did a lot of the artwork and stuff for it as well. And he realized, mm-hmm. and it was one of the reasons that the game ended up being Super Mario Brothers 3 was delayed, was because he took on too many jobs himself and ran late. Mm-hmm. And so he specifically called out in Super Mario World that he was not going to do that. He actually brought in one of the new hires was to take over a lot of his old jobs because he wanted to focus on directing so that this game wasn't delayed. However, it's probably a good thing that they ended up delaying the game because they delayed the system. Because when the first peek of the game was like just images, and I think a couple videos were released and just kind of demoed to people in 1988, a lot of critics didn't like it because it looked very, very different. It looked very much like another version of Super Mario Brothers 3. A lot of the publications were like, this doesn't seem like they made a lot of changes. This doesn't seem like a lot of growth. The graphics don't look that much better. I don't know. And so at that point, they basically like, well, we need to just redo a bunch of stuff then to change this
game. And that's your handicap of when they built Super Mario 3 in the new engine, they probably were like, yeah, we'll just, again, do the same thing and just kind of roll forward. And
right. And some of the innovations they had for Super Mario 3, which was the like map, the overworld map was like really new. Mm-hmm. That was the first time they made almost the exact same map for Super Mario Brothers 4, which was what it was called at the time. And so they're like, no, you need to change it up. So that's when the extra year gave them a lot more time to work. And it's at that point they added this fun little guy who, if I ever put the clip out, you'll see a Yoshi. but it was the debut of Yoshi because Miyamoto had wanted to add basically a dinosaur for Mario to ride on since like Mario Brothers 1. He wanted it forever, but they didn't have the ability to do so in the NES. It just did not have those capabilities. So now that they had all of this extra power that was coming from the SNES, they're like, well, we're going to do a Yoshi. So they did a couple of trial runs, and basically it's a dinosaur that acts like a horse.
Yeah.
He's a horse.
Yep, he's a mount.
He's a mount, but he's a dinosaur. And so they decided to theme the whole game around dinosaurs. That's why it's Dinosaur Land that we're in.
Yep.
Because of Yoshi.
Yep.
Because of Yoshi.
And then, no turning back from that.
Basically, yeah. So they built it out. They added a lot more colors and depth to the colors and details to the world. They made it so the world was all interconnected as opposed to like chunked out like in previous versions. Like this is where they went with the really more complex backgrounds we ended up having. They started taking advantage of things like parallax scrolling and transparent textures. It was all coming in that they could now do on the SNES because it had like way more colors than the NES had as well.
Yeah,
but it also
colors and the layers in the background that give you the parallax scrolling and stuff like that.
It's the little details like Mario now has back pockets, which he never had before. And it's silly, but you think about it, you're like, these are what defined Mario moving forward, were these changes that they ended up doing.
Yeah.
The other really interesting development thing, which, of course, we always talk about the music. And so I thought it was really fun that Koji Kondo, who has done all the music for Mario like forever and all the sound effects.
Yeah.
After he finished up Super Mario Brothers 3, he's like, I think I used too much music. He thought he didn't stand out because it was just, they were used just once and then never used again. So he kind of went in the really opposite direction for Super Mario World and was like, no, I'm going to do it where it's basically the exact, for almost every level, it's the same bass theme that then he does variations on, where he puts the pitch up or down or slows it down a little bit or speeds it up a little bit. And just, it's really interesting how if you listen really close, you're like, oh, it is the same theme over and over again. But it sounds different depending on if you're in a cave level or if you're underwater or, you know, all the different stuff, which I think is brilliant. I love
it. It's a fun way to kind of also flex your music muscles.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, I could make this same theme work in a half a dozen different ways, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Which the music I absolutely remember, like, as soon as you boot up the game and hit the first level. Like,
I think it's also interesting that because, again, the SNES had so much more power behind it than the NES, the NES could do MIDI sounds, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the SNES, you could sample, basically. He could put sampled sounds into it. And so that's why he was able to add, like, horn sounds and drum beats and, like, actually bring in sound effects that were much deeper because they didn't have to be MIDI sounds, which is kind of fun.
Right.
And there were 8 audio tracks at once, which is two more than the NES.
I mean, the sound effects in this game were definitely
Oh, they're iconic. They're like those are the sound effects you think of today.
Yeah, like the Yoshi sounds, the like that wop wop.
Yeah.
Or the jumping on something as I bang the mic.
Yeah.
Trying to make a boom like the poof.
Yeah.
That like that thumping boom.
When you slam into the ground from the cape, like the just the thud that comes from it. It was really, really cool. I also appreciate that in the opening credits number, which is one of the few different songs in there, he wrote it to specifically introduce one instrument at a time to show off the 8 audio tracks.
Yeah. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. You don't think about
I saw that in your notes. I saw that in the notes, and I had to think about it.
Yeah,
it's
so cool. I love how much they were able to do. And it's funny because we look like 16-bit. That's like nothing, but for them, it was exponentially better than the NES, which is what's really cool about it. So that's enough development notes. I know I kind of rambled. I watched quite a few videos about the development notes, so I got excited.
Oh, no, and I'm glad you did because I wanted to, and I got caught doing some other stuff because I knew, as a launch title, there's so much that goes into this.
Oh, yeah.
Because they want to explore everything that they can.
Mm-hmm.
So
getting into our fun facts, I like this one that when the game was eventually re-released on the Game Boy Advance in 2001, it was the most sold handheld game until 2006. So it held the record for five years. A re-release of a game held the record for five years. And you know, that was not quite the peak of handheld systems, but it was getting there to the peak of handheld systems. Like the Game Boy Advance, that's when I think the Sega was still kind of in existence. The Sega, what was it called? The Game Gear. The Game Gear was
the Game Gear out. That took like 8 batteries and lasted for 20 minutes.
But yeah, I just think that's really cool. No other game on even Game Boy Advance, like competing with itself, there was no game that could beat it for five years, which is incredible. I also like that on the original release of the Super Mario World. Yeah, so eventually during development, they decided it's not Super Mario Brothers 4, it's Super Mario World, because it's a whole world that you get to explore.
Mm-hmm.
But just in case, in the early editions of the game, on the covers and stuff, it says Super Mario World and then : Super Mario Brothers 4. Just in case you didn't know.
Just in case you didn't know.
Oh, which I find so funny.
Yeah.
And then this is the first game, along with Pilot Wings, which was released in the same year, that credited Miyamoto as the creator instead of using a pseudonym. So I didn't know. Apparently in the early Mario games, he went by a pseudonym.
I didn't know that either. Like, I guess because we didn't care at the time.
Well, we weren't paying attention.
Or never looked at the credits.
Right.
Or we never beat the game, so we never saw the credits.
And more than that, you know, and as going back as adults, we knew it was Miyamoto, so we never thought about it. It was Miyamoto.
Yeah, exactly.
As I've said in previous podcasts, our Lord and Savior, Miyamoto.
Oh, what an adorable old man.
I know, right? So, of course, a game like this still has speedruns available. For the 96 exit speedrun, it was done in 1 hour, 21 minutes, 9 seconds and 833 milliseconds, which is nuts. And that was set 7 months ago.
7 months ago, yeah. Like, I mean, speedrunning in Mario is...
Yeah.
It's hand in
absolutely
hand. Like that's these games were built to be speedrun.
Ironically, like, they didn't mean it.
I mean, they're not, but
they are.
Like, no, they didn't mean to. But the way that they built these games,
right? And I find it so fascinating. Of a lot of times, there's multiple categories for speedruns, and normally I only list like the biggest one. Like 96 exits is the main category for this, but there are like 10 other categories for this game where they all have 100+ people on the leaderboards, meaning they're very active leaderboards.
Oh yeah, I mean there's a lot of depth to this game. Like it could be as long or as short as you want it to be.
Yeah, well they're all short cuz they're speedruns, but
well, okay, fair enough.
But I think the other thing that, besides speedruns that have come out, the other big thing that's modern-ish that has come out from Super Mario World is Super Mario World Kaizo. Mm-hmm. So Kaizo is when people who have basically built levels that are really, really freaking hard, but in this case, they've built them within the Super Mario World engine, so they're using all of the same mechanics that you have in Super Mario World. There are other Kaizo levels from Super Mario Maker that you can do it in different types, but Super Mario World Kaizo is like a big one. It is one of the big ones. I could never do Kaizo. I could never do speedrunning for the same reason of I don't have the patience for that. I was cursing up the storm when I was just trying to beat a level, let alone impossible levels where if you don't get everything perfect, you're doomed. No, couldn't do it. But it's a massive community.
We have a friend of the podcast that does
Kaizo
levels, and we watch him stream, and it's just like, this seems like a nightmare. Mm-hmm. It seems like everything that I hate about these games put together.
As I put it, it's the modern popular way of torturing yourself just for fun. I mean, again, there's so much still going on with this game, and that's because it was really popular even at the time.
Yeah, it sold over 20 million copies worldwide, so it was the highest selling game on the SNES. Obviously, it was the highest selling Game Boy Advance game when the re-release came out. So, game rankings had it at 94%. It's still considered one of the greatest games of all time by a ton of publications.
Yeah.
Between the visuals and the changes from Super Mario Brothers 3, so they took a lot of that criticism to heart when they released the pre-production one. And it's one of those quintessential launch games where it's just like that and you know, like Super Mario 64 are just like...
It's those games that make sure that these systems ended up being the massive hits that they are. It's because of these launch titles, because people wanted to play the launch title and therefore they bought the system.
Mm-hmm.
This very much was the case. And even beyond the SNES, they re-released it 2 more times on the SNES, as far as I could tell, in various packs, then the GBA, then the Wii Virtual Store, the 3DS Virtual Store, the Switch Virtual Store, and the SNES Classic. Like, they're just going to keep releasing it as long as people will keep playing it, which they will.
And we did.
So, but I think that's a good segue of we played it back in the day. So let's go back and talk about our memories of playing this game back in the day. I think it's time to play that Chiacarina of Time, go back to the past before we had a chance to play this game again in the modern era, and talk about our feelings before then. So let's go.
Let's do it. Yahoo!
Burp, burp.
That's not in this game.
Burp, burp. I'm trying to make the Yoshi noise.
That's Mario 64.
Burp, burp.
Burp, burp.
That music means we're back in the past, back before we had a chance to play this game again. So, Chris, what do you remember about Super Mario World? For, I think, the SNES.
It was definitely SNES, because this was definitely another babysitter game that we played primarily, right? Like, I feel like this has to be the first time we had played it was at the babysitter's place. And
Had to. I can't imagine.
Did we play it at friends' houses, too? Like,
I did as a high schooler. I know I did later in life, but not as a... Which later in life, saying high school is later in life is not really accurate at this point in our growth span. But no, I definitely played it in high school at friends' houses. But the childhood memories come from the babysitters entirely from the babysitters.
I remember mostly we played it, but I remember watching it a ton.
Mm-hmm.
This is definitely a game which is in this podcast odd for me to say that I'm the one that was a spectator a lot of times, but I was definitely a spectator a lot for this game. Probably because I was bad at it.
Right. I was going to say it was mostly her second oldest son who played the video games with us is probably who we watched the most.
Yes.
Because he was around. The oldest son really wasn't around. And I just, the colors. I remember knowing that this was the same Mario that we played as kids at grandma's house. Like, I remember making that association in my brain of, like, this is the same character from Mario at grandma's house. But it also was such a different game. It was just...
It's
years apart in my brain.
I remember playing Super Mario 3 at the neighbor's.
Really?
So I remember that. Yeah.
See, I don't think I ever played Super Mario 3. Not as a kid.
Yeah, no, I played it at, across the street neighbor. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, but yeah, like the colors were just so vibrant. Like
it had
the
Yoshi.
Music was it had Yoshi. I literally have Yoshi in all caps in my notes. I also this note is. This note is wrong because I said the Tanuki tail. The
no, Tanuki tail is not.
Was this Mario is, 3. It was
this
the
is the cape. This is the feather and the cape. Which
the feather and the cape.
The noise that you would make boing, when you could float boing, with the cape, boing. Which I could never accomplish. I tried so freaking hard to be able
to
bounce.
Well, you suck at flying anyways, so.
Attacked.
I was going to say, that's a video moment right there that the podcast is not going to see.
A montage. oh, of my face of when you said that and how rude you are. You're awful. No, it's... But I remember wanting to do it so badly because it looked so cool. And it was a mechanic I had never seen before in any sort of game. And so it was something I really wanted to emulate because it was so cool. And I was like, look, I could skip the whole level if I do this.
Because like the Tanuki tail was just like hitting X or whatever and you would just spin around.
It was much simpler
than the feather was you had to like rock back and forth. Mm-hmm. So it was more of like a glider mechanic.
It was. But yeah, you had the Yoshi. You had obviously Fire Flower, standard power up for that. Because I want to say the Feather and Fire Flower are the only power ups. I mean, Mushroom, of course. But there weren't any other power ups, I think, besides the two in that game.
I believe that is correct. Other than, the star, superstar, obviously.
Oh, yeah, and the superstar.
Yeah. And Yoshi, half the time, you just got the egg. You got, like, baby Yoshi, so you had to feed it before
it
turned
into... I forgot about
that. Before it turned into full-size Yoshi.
Yeah, you had to feed him the apples or no, enemies, whatever you could until he was
whatever
full-size.
Whatever it was, yeah. And you could use Yoshi for an extra jump.
Sacrificial jump. Poor Yoshi. Devastating.
I think Brawl in the Family made a joke about that.
I think every webcomic has made a joke about sacrificing poor Yoshi to the realm so you could get that extra little leap to normally either survive or get the it's when they did it to like get the higher point at the end, like so they hit higher. I was like, that's just rude. Poor Yoshi. Poor Yoshi. But I remember this introduced like really random enemies like the football dude, and I always thought that was so weird.
That's right. And it was all over the place. This is another one of those games, much like Earthworm Jim, but I remember the first two levels very, very vividly.
Mostly
because that's like all we could do.
Yeah. But the difference, well, maybe not quite the difference, is there are way more levels in Super Mario World than there are in Earthworm Jim. It was so
tons.
Complex.
Yeah.
And I don't think I understood the concept of multi-exits until much later playing. I was like, wait, there's more than one way to finish a level?
Right.
And I just remember being blown away the first time I heard about that. It was like, what? Like
that's like how you get to the first haunted house or whatever.
Right, because like, I remember playing enough, like probably trading off with people, because as we said, we couldn't beat everything ourselves, and being like, well, why can't we get there? And like, well, you need to find the special exit. Like, what do you mean special exit? Like... I got the exit. How dare you?
Well, and this had the original Mario co-op of going back and forth,
yes.
Right?
I believe so. Yeah, there was not two player in the same level for quite some time there.
I remember the dotted blocks, like the different colored, there was like yellow, blue, green. And
the question mark blocks?
Yeah, the ones where you had to like do the level to hit the switch.
You'd find the switch,
in all the other levels after that.
Yep.
Because like
the big switches,
the first one,
blue, give you green, items. Not always. Sometimes they do. It depends. Because sometimes they're just platforms that you use.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a really cool mechanic as well. Music you said just is so stand out in my brain of iconic music for Mario. I think.
Oh, I remember so many of it, like the bonus level.
Oh yeah,
music.
But I also think, like, when people think Mario music, they don't think Super Mario Brothers. They think Super Mario World. I think this is the music everyone thinks of.
Like the da 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 da.
Yeah, and the haunted house music and
oh yeah, and like Well, and those the sound effects for that too, like the going through the doors in the haunted house or the castles, like that big like groaning noise go through, or like it's in my notes I said the sounds were very visceral, like going through the door when you do like the little spin jump and hit something, you get that like big pop sound. Like it's the sound design in this game was great, like. Yeah, the music was great.
No, I just...
As you said, such a step up from the NES games, like, in terms of that, just, like, not immersiveness, obviously, because it's 2D side-scrolling, but...
No, but it felt so much bigger than the previous games. Not just in the number of levels, but everything about it just felt bigger. And it sticks out, like, again, when I think of Mario, like, childhood Mario... I think of Super Mario World and not Super Mario Brothers, even though we played Mario Brothers first. I know we did. It still sticks out in my brain way more. It just does.
And in fairness, we are at the babysitter a lot more than we are at
Grandma's. That's true.
Grandma's. Yeah. Like, so it's, I still remember how to beat the final boss, even if I don't think I ever did. Cause it's the one with the Bowser in the weird, crazy clown face.
Oh, in his clown face car. Yeah.
Yeah, and you got to stomp on the mechanical Bowsers and kick them up into the air.
Ah, yes, because they were bombs. Yes. I think this was the first game that had him in his flying little Koopa
ship. I think so, yeah.
Ship, which then eventually it's mostly Bowser Jr. now who runs around in that, not Bowser. So it's kind of funny that was just a Bowser thing back then.
Yeah.
I also remember his castle having the neon signs. Like that final level was like neon signs.
Was it? I don't remember that part.
Might be just in my brain.
I remember when you would beat the castles. Did you save Yoshi's from castles in this game, or is that a different one?
I think that's a different.
Is that a Yoshi? That's probably just a Yoshi game.
I don't remember.
It's probably a Yoshi game.
I
remember when you beat it, you like run outside and hit like the TNT plunger.
Oh, or is
whatever,
that this
right?
game?
I think so.
I remember that they'd have the little white flag.
Yeah.
I don't remember if this is the one you explode.
Game? I thought so, but maybe not.
I don't know. We'll find out.
We'll find out. Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I remember what was the level the first time you kind of are like underground? It's very like the rock level with the shell guys that aren't.
Yeah. What about it?
That's just a level that sticks out of my brain because it's early.
Yeah, but it wasn't the first underground level, but. Because they had them in Super Mario Brothers.
No, I meant in this game.
Oh yeah, I mean that one's. I mean, they just
you gotta constantly run because like the ceiling's collapsing.
Yes. I think you're thinking if it doesn't collapse the whole time, it goes up and down.
Right.
And so you have to like find the crevices that you don't get smashed to pieces in, which I never did well at.
And this is the first time it had the grates that you had to climb on. And,
oh yeah, like, and then you could flip them,
and you could like punch. You could punch the Koopas,
on the opposite side. But you also, if you were on certain panels, you could punch it and you'd flip to the other side. Which I remember being like, "Whoa!" Like there's dimension. It added dimension without adding dimension, which is kind of wild.
It was a fantastic launch game, is what it was.
Oh yeah,
really.
Defined the system with the very first game to come out for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's enough points. Otherwise, I think we're going to keep rhapsodizing, and that'll happen later as well.
we're going to keep what?
Rhapsodize? I said that wrong. How do I say it?
No, I just never heard that phrase before.
Yeah? Isn't that a thing?
I believe. Well, Lisa agrees. Producer Lisa agrees with you, so I'm the Luddite here. So, yes, we could keep doing that word that you just said.
Praising this game is the synonym.
I mean, you know what the word means because you know the root.
Yeah, queen, whatever.
I'm trying to diversify our vocabulary on this podcast, Chris.
Don't go there. You don't want to go there.
But anyway, Chris, with all that said, what's your rose-colored score for this game?
I mean, it's got to be a 9, just because it was just, I think as I watched it more than I played, but I remember not necessarily being good at it, but not because the game was designed badly. It's just because I was crap at platformers.
We were young at that point. Like,
yeah, just the rose. And again, rose score. It's the rose tinted glasses are so rosy for this game. I'm giving it a 9.
Yeah.
What about you?
No, I have to agree. I think it's one of the few games that I barely played in the grand scheme of things when I was really young that I still want to give a 9. I did play it again more in high school and since. Mm. So not recently. Producer Kyle actually has played it very recently and everyone will be shocked to hear beat the game with every exit. and I vaguely watched that. So that's why I remember some things. But I tried not to knowing we were going to do an episode on it.
Mm-hmm.
And but I loved watching that game. I have such good memories of this game. The music, it has held such a special place in my heart for being like the Mario game that I cared about as a kid.
I agree.
And so it had to be a 9. Just has to be a 9. So that pulls us into our predicted scores. what's your predicted score, Chris, for Super Mario World?
I'm gonna go an 8.5. I think. There's a reason everyone still talks about this game, so I'm assuming it's
there are still speed runs. They're still popular
fairly well, and that it's going to be built well enough. So 8.5, I think I'm still going to suck at it, but I'm going to be playing it on the mini, so I'll have save states.
Nice.
So well, you could save in this game. So
yeah, there was there saving.
Yeah, so I'm going to try not to save scum as much. I'm going to try. I said try. What about you? What's your predicted score?
I'm going to shock the world. I'm going to do a 9. I'm going to do a higher score than you. I just think that it's just I maybe that'll be somewhat fueled by nostalgia, but in this case I know I'm better at Mario games, and while this is a little bit different than modern Mario games, a lot of the mechanics and the ideas are similar enough, and I know I'm better at them now, and I've played a lot more of them now, and so I think I can really enjoy a lot more of this game than I used to, and so I have to give it a 9. I'm really looking forward to playing this game.
I am too. It's been a while since we've played a straight up platformer like this.
I'm so excited. I'm really looking forward to playing this game. I'm really looking forward to streaming this game. It is a classic.
Yeah. So 2 9s for rose tinted scores. I have a predicted score of 8.5. You have a 9. As you said, looking forward to playing this game. So let's go do it. Let's play this game and hopefully it'll live up. Ready?
Let's go. Yahoo!
I was almost going to do that.
I win.
I know. I don't think you said that in this game, though.
Doesn't matter.
You said anything.
Maybe. We'll find out. Okay, bye.
Bye. So we are back from the past. We have played the game. Some more than others, but we have played the game. How we feeling about it? I guess we should talk about what this game is.
Let's get into it. Chris.
Yeah.
Do you know the plot of this game?
Not until I saw the notes.
I didn't either until I looked at the manual.
Yes, I failed and didn't look at the manual. I should have, because that's my favorite part.
I know.
Of all games ever. And they have the manuals in the SNES Classic.
I know.
Yeah, and I completely failed. But
failed.
The plot's there. It's sort of, I mean, it's a Mario game, so, you know.
Yeah.
30 cool. Go 210. But so Mario and the gang are on vacation after Super Mario Brothers 3 and head off to Dinosaur Land. But oh no, Bowser has captured the princess.
Princess Toadstool, because it's early days.
It's While looking for Princess Toadstool, Mario and Luigi find a giant egg, and inside pops out Yoshi, our friend,
Yoshi.
Our new friend,
Yoshi.
He explains that all his friends were imprisoned by Koopalings, who were still Bowser's kids at this point. And
they're
sorry, I'm bleeding your nose. They hadn't been kicked to the curb.
They're not his kids anymore. He's disinherited the Koopalings.
He had a junior
and just said, screw the rest of you.
I've mentioned this comic before, Brawl in the Family, where it's like, it's Bowser talking with someone else where it's like, you have kids? He's like, dude, I have 9 kids.
Not anymore. Bowser Jr. is the only one. The rest got relegated.
Yeah, whatever. It's fine.
Koopas of his. Like, he just works with them. It's fine. Disinherited. Taken out of the will.
So Bowser's parentage and custodial issues aside, after that, Mario and Luigi agree to help find Yoshi's friends and the princess.
And that's where we go. Off Yay. On adventures. And this is all taking place in Dinosaur Land, as we said, which is why this is one of the only games there's no Toad ever.
There's no Toad, yeah.
There's no Toad in this game.
There's not really Goombas either.
The Goombas
there's
look like, different. They changed how the Goombas look for this game. They're
different.
Like round.
Yeah, yeah, round and red.
They kind of messed up
I
the
have
Goombas.
Notes that literally are like, is that supposed to be a Goomba?
The answer is yes. It is supposed to be a Goomba. So. They go back because we've gone too far. We made a mistake. We have to go back.
We tried to change it and we hated it.
We hated it.
So they introduced a lot in this game,
they
obviously.
Did.
So they introduced saves, which oh
thank
my god.
God.
Like, so you could save after castles and
ghost houses.
Haunted houses. It added things like a spin jump.
Which is
was
crucial
hilarious.
To Kaizo.
It is crucial to Kaizo and can lead you into bad things if you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, it screwed me up so many times.
Yeah, because if you start spin jumping on blocks, you just keep going, which is the crucial part to Kaizo. But if you're not ready for that, all of a sudden you're just in lava constantly.
Yep.
So.
And as we mentioned, this was the introduction to Yoshi. So Yoshi was the first time in the game and his ability to eat enemies, which is exciting. But also the different shells that he eats gave him different power-ups.
Yes.
Which I thought was interesting. The red shell, he could spit fire. The blue shell, he could fly. And the yellow shell, he could like really heavy ground pound. And then there was a rainbow shell where you could do all three.
Yep.
But also there were red, blue, and yellow Yoshis throughout the game that you could find. And if you found them, you could keep them until you lost them. Because again,
I got
poor
really
Yoshi.
Upset when I lost my, lost my blue Yoshi.
Me too. When I lost the blue Yoshi, I was devastated.
I think I tried to keep him and it was until it was an underwater level where you essentially have to get rid of him because
rude.
You have to climb a vine.
Yeah, the Yoshis can't climb vines and that's rude.
Nope.
The other thing that they've added color-wise was they had color switches that you could find out throughout the world. And so what these switch palaces would do is that you'd go into a level and there'd be a dotted outline of like a box. And it was like if you found the switch of the corresponding color, the next time you go to that level, it would be filled in with either you could get over a gap easier or it would have like an item box or something.
Yeah, because like the yellow ones had mushrooms, the green ones had feathers.
I don't remember if they had specific
things. Which the thing that they added.
Yes.
So
the feather cape.
The feather cape as opposed to the leaf tanuki tail.
Or the raccoon.
Which was kind of.
Which is different than the tanuki, apparently.
What?
Yeah. There's a raccoon, which is Mario with the raccoon ears and the raccoon tail. And then there's tanuki Mario, where he has the full outfit on. Right?
Mario. What was in Mario 3? Wasn't
both.
That Tanuki?
Both.
Was there both in Mario 3?
Both.
Do I not remember that?
I only know it because I looked it up. Yeah, so Tanuki Tanuki Mario and Raccoon Mario were both introduced in Mario 3.
Yeah, and that was kind of, it was more like, I don't even know how to describe, unless you've played the game, I feel like it's hard to describe the difference. Like Tanuki Mario was you twirled around and could kind of go feather
you
could, Mario, you had a cape
you could
and
hover,
you like.
You had the tail to do damage and then you could basically hover with Tanuki Mario or the raccoon where the tail spins like a helicopter and you hover. But with the cape, you could go for longer. But you had to do a lot more work to do so because you had to rock Mario back and forth to try to keep him gliding on the cape.
And it made the boinging sound.
Yeah.
That's one of those iconic boing, 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 like rocking back and forth because you ran, took off. And you could also spin. It had the spin attack mechanic, which was, it was incredibly important in a couple levels.
Yeah.
Like if you didn't have it, it made the level significantly harder.
Oh god, but, people who like speed run are able to like just glide over full levels, which is kind of nuts.
Yeah. This game introduced, I think they didn't have this in Super Mario Brothers 3, Where you could essentially hold an extra item? Yes.
So in Super Mario Bros. 3, you could have an item in inventory that then you could put onto your character before you entered the level. Mm-hmm. But Super Mario World was the first one where you carried that extra item into the level with you.
Yeah.
And so,
if you got hurt, it would drop down. Or if you hit select, it would drop down if you wanted to, like...
Correct.
Because if you had the fire flower and picked up a feather, it would transfer the fire flower up. And if you wanted to switch, you could hit select and it would drop down.
Yeah.
And you could effectively switch what you were doing, which was nice.
Which, yeah. The annoying part of that was, unlike in Super Mario 3, if you had the feather and you get hit by an enemy... You don't go to Big Mario. You drop immediately to Small Mario, which is
That is true.
And even worse, I found out, so I had a feather, I had a cape, and then my backup was a cape, and a mushroom ran into me, and the mushroom replaced my cape.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that can happen.
Oh, I was so mad. I was so mad when that happened. I never knew I would avoid mushrooms, but I was like, no.
Yeah, right. They added enemies in this one that weren't in the previous games. Charging Chuck, mm-hmm. I guess it's the name. It's a football player.
Yeah, did you not know that was his name?
Is that a joke? No, I didn't know that was his name.
I mean, I used him all the time in golf, and it always said Charging Chuck every time I use him
in golf. That's actually true, and I never paid attention. Charging Chuck, the football player, who is apparently a Koopa?
He's a Koopa, apparently, under
all
that.
That's
what someone called him. They're like, he's a Koopa, and I looked it up. He's a really muscly Koopa who wears football gear.
Good for him. Good for him. He's gone to the Temple of Swole.
He has indeed got that HGH going on.
Oh, no. Ain't no drug testing in Super Mario World.
Bowser encourages it.
They added Wiggler, which was there at least... I think the forest was mostly when you saw...
Yeah, you saw him in the forest.
Wiggler. Yeah. Monty Mole, who I forgot about. Like, he pops out of the ground with a little...
Oh, he was so rude. He'd come...
Like the Tex Avery...
Yes.
...silhouette when he pops out of the ground.
Yes. I always liked that you could tell where they were because you would just see the silhouette, and it was, like, filled in with small rocks, and you're like, I wonder what's going to happen here.
Magic Koopa, or what did someone, I got it in my notes, Kamek,
yeah.
Whatever, yeah.
However you say it.
God, those things were the worst.
Annoying,
worst, yes.
Smaller things that they added, there were Yoshi coins or dragon coins. Apparently they're dragon coins, but there were five of them.
That's when they couldn't figure out what they wanted to call Yoshi.
True. There were five of them per level. Most of the time, some levels had zero. It was zero or five, basically. Mm-hmm. And if you got all five in a single run on that level, you would get an extra life.
Which was kind of annoying when you hit the halfway waypoint. You essentially went back to zero and couldn't get all five.
Yeah, you had to get them in one single run. You could not die during that run, which definitely was frustrating. But yeah, there was a lot of new things that they added to the game. But I think it's time to, like, let's get into actually playing the game. As has been alluded to, Chris did not finish the game because he's the worst.
I know. It's just life. Life happens.
Life happens.
I wanted to. I say that every game that I don't finish. I wanted to finish.
I finished the game.
Also, this game just pissed me off. So
I finished it. I beat Bowser. But of the 96 exits available... I found like 43.
Yeah, explain that, because that's also...
Yes. So one of the parts of the game was that certain levels had multiple exits. The way you could tell is if the icon for the level was red, then it had more than one exit. If it was yellow, it only had a single exit.
And that was huge, because that was, you know, ways to do things like get to the levels where you unlock the blocks.
Or
you
would need to switch palaces.
Find a secret exit or...
Or the shortcuts. There were a lot of shortcuts that you could switch to get to the Star Road, for example, whereas through normally secret exits and everything. The other thing is there were some levels where this one exit would lead you nowhere. And so you had to find another exit to actually leave the area. I think the funniest was there was one in, I think it's Chocolate Island, where I found the main exit, or what felt like the main exit, and it starts opening the path. And so Mario starts going around this circle, and you're going around. You're like, okay, where's the next level? Where's the next level? And it just opens up the circle, and then you circle and end up back at where you started.
Yeah, that is on stream, that moment where you're just like, yay, oh!
I was so mad. I was like, what just happened? But so, yeah, so there were multiple exits sometimes to move forward, other times to just get to like certain areas, like there would be pipes off to the side that you could only get to that would help you skip areas and stuff like that. It was interesting to have the multi-exits. As I mentioned, unsurprisingly, producer Kyle found all 96 exits, because of course he did.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I believe, if I remember correctly, there was only one he had to actively look up how to get to, because it was a really, really obscure, like, you had to beat the level in a certain amount of time with a certain amount of coins in order to get the second exit or something like that. And so, like,
So this has the time mechanic as Mario games do, and not used to playing a time game. It's been a while since we've had timed levels. The number of times with the talking about stress-inducing sounds.
Oh, God, the music. Yeah, and the music would go faster and faster.
Yeah, I'm trying to be methodical or try to do something, and then all of a sudden I've got 20 seconds to beat the level.
I mean, to be fair, when that starts,
happened to me so many times.
I believe you have like 90 seconds once that music starts. It's still very tight.
Yeah, but when I'm only like halfway through the level. Like,
The benefit of the midway points, which was also new to this game, was adding those midway points, the like check marks, basically, the checkpoints, that also made you get big if you were small when you ran through them. So that was nice.
Yes.
Was that if you ran out of time and they started you at the midpoint, you had full time at the midpoint.
Yes.
Though half the time you were exploring looking for the Yoshi coins, so it defeated the purpose.
Well, yeah. There was, where did I run into something weird with that? Because if you are playing a level that you've played before, you could hit start and select to leave the level.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did that if I wanted to like grind.
I did it to get feathers and Yoshis.
One-ups and, feathers and Yoshis, which live system. It's so, literally all caps in my notes. Live systems are dumb.
The other problem with the live system in this game, because they're save points, they're saves, which is great.
Yeah.
But if you save with 99 lives, you have 5 when you turn it back on.
Yep.
So,
yep.
And very little point to grinding lives to a certain extent beyond like what you need in the moment.
Well, and we both played the SNES Classic, which has save states. Which
I did use save states,
I use save states, especially when I was trying to get through levels, because there was a couple of the castles that, good God.
So I mostly use save states in between levels just so I didn't have to go back to save points, because you can repeat any castle or ghost house. Maybe not castle, because I think they get destroyed, so I'm not sure if you're allowed to redo them. But
no, I saw that you could actually, if you hold like L and R, you could actually replay a castle.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, but like for ghost houses, you can replay them and then save. And so most people go back to the very first ghost house. You can beat it in like 20 seconds if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so you can save. And so in theory, I could have done that every single time. But it's so long to get back there.
Yeah.
It takes so long that I was like, I'm just going to save state. I don't feel guilty. I only save stated in a level for the very final boss, because in the final castle, because I got through the, like, because there you have to go through multiple stages before you get to the boss. And I'd get through them multiple times, or I'd die halfway through the second one, and then I'd get to Bowser and then die and have to redo all the early. I was like, I'm so tired of it. I just want to beat the game.
There was a couple castles where I save stated in the middle of, because it annoyed me. Because the castles especially have a thing where
there's no midway points.
To get to the halfway point.
There is none.
It's like, well, they're there, but a lot of times they're in like a secret area or something like that.
I often did not encounter them and would get very angry.
Yeah.
Ghost houses for as well. I would be like, oh my God, please.
The ghost houses, haunted houses, whatever, boo houses were super interesting because they were like mini puzzles, right?
They were labyrinth. And you couldn't bring Yoshi with you.
No, because he's
same
a
with
coward.
The castles, to be fair. Hey.
Yes.
Poor Yoshi. But yeah, there so
was,
save states did help, but the live system is annoying because if you die, you can hit continue and you just go to your last save point. And so the only thing that like really changes is you lose whatever power-ups you had, obviously, but you're dead, so you would have lost them anyway. You're back to five.
That's huge losing, like especially going through certain castles, not having a feather.
But if you die, you lose it anyway. So that's where save states cheat it. That's nothing to do with live system and everything to do with...
So I kind of viewed some of that as I could go back and go get a feather in another level.
Yeah.
Or I could just use the save state from earlier where I still had the feather.
Yeah, I would do that. I would use a save state if I died too early in the level and I didn't think it was worth the death.
Oh, no, absolutely. Like, if I got hit, not even died. It's just like, I lost a feather, especially the one castle that's got a bunch of the dry bones.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, if you don't have a feather, it's a pain in the butt. Bones. Like, yeah. So I was just like, well, I'm just going to restart because it's making this level so much harder.
Oh, absolutely. And I cancel. And... And I definitely did that a lot when I was playing. Mm-hmm. So save states definitely saved me on this playthrough, for sure.
Yeah.
I never would have gotten as far as I did without them.
It's a time thing, if nothing else. Like, not even, again, I know both of us tried not to use save states in the middle to save scum. Yeah. I ran into some interesting stuff when I save scummed. Blocks wouldn't appear.
Ooh.
Like, in one of the castles, I would save state to the beginning of the level, and then... One of the like the
oh,
question
right.
block
I remember
that had
one
a feather.
Your, like, the feather didn't appear.
I was like, what? And one time when I was really save scumming, I saved before a boss.
Okay.
Hit him twice, died. Save scum went back to right before the boss. Hit the boss once,
and
the boss died.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, I was just like, yeah. So that was. Whatever, however they rehosted it.
That's interesting.
For the SNES Mini. Like,
yeah, the SNES Classic. Yeah, I played it not on the SNES Classic, but on our SNES, but we have a like ROM that has all the games. But it still has save states.
Yeah.
And what would happen when I save state is if I did it too quickly, the music would be wrong. So sometimes I'd be against a boss and it'd be like the shop music.
Oh, interesting.
Which is really funny.
Yeah.
But like, it would do things like the sound effects would still be there, but the music would be gone. Or it'd be the shop music, and then I'd be running out of time, and the shop music would speed up, which I didn't know it could do.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I definitely had some weird save state issues as well.
Remember that mechanic? Because I didn't until it happened, where you turn into a balloon.
Ah, yes, the pee balloon.
Yeah, I was just like, what? I remembered as soon as it happened. Yeah, I was just like, this game is so weird.
It's so weird. Well, that's, like there were levels for the Yoshis where you got a baby Yoshi, and if you fed it enough, it became a full Yoshi, and that's how you got some of the colored Yoshis. But there's also ways. I had a green Yoshi, and I went into a special area where I used, like, it gave Yoshi, like, wings or something like that temporarily. But if you beat this special area, he turned into a blue Yoshi and you got to keep a blue Yoshi, which was also very exciting.
I remember the wings.
Huh?
Yeah. I was going to say, I remember the wing part because you
and
fly.
I was just like, oh my God, it makes this so... Because there were some of those moving platforms through the air levels and I had the flying Yoshi and I was like, nope, flying Yoshi time. I mean, he doesn't keep flying permanently. The way it works is as long as the shell is in his mouth, he can fly. But then as soon as he swallows it, obviously you can't anymore, and he can only hold it for so long. So like at certain point you start getting like animations of him about to swallow, And then once it does, you fall.
There were a lot of fun mechanics.
There were. They added. Game. It is incredible how much they added to this game, considering that was the worry so many critics had for those early demos, was like, it's too much like Super Mario Brothers 3. And they're like, bet, we're going to change it.
Yeah.
Like, and they did. They added so much. They changed so much. Again, one of the reasons it's considered one of the greatest games of all time, and it's definitely one of the best SNES games of all time, is because of how much they added and changed and just made it so much better than any of the previous games had. And so many, again, iconic things that we now associate with Mario came from this game. Yoshi.
Oh, yeah.
Some of his look, he became portlier and shorter, and this is where, like, Luigi started having the big jumps and, like...
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things. But the enemies, like the Wigglers and Monty Moles and Magic Koopas, like, they're in every game now. You know, it is really interesting how much Mario lore so builds on itself. Very much so. But you can just... finding those originating points is always just very interesting to me. We talk about in the Rose a lot, but we have so many memories, if not playing the game, of watching this game, that when... Every time we booted up the game and you'd have like the Super Nintendo logo come across the screen and like right as the music started, I'd always go boop, 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 boop. And I would sing along with it. And Kyle's like, you're ridiculous. Every single time. Because that music was so just ingrained in my brain of this is how the game starts. Like, it was just so funny of like every single time, and just going into the levels and hearing the like ghost house music and stuff, like it was
and then just like that but
the music brought me back. The game itself did, but the music brought me back to when we used to watch and play this game again. Didn't get this far, as far as I did, you know, as an adult when I was a kid. But, you know, I played it. I played the first couple levels real good.
And the again, the sound effects, like the slamming into the ground, the spin jump when you pop something.
There's so much of this game that was just hit all the, like, memory pings.
Yeah. Also, it was frustrating as hell.
Oh, so there's a reason. There's a reason I didn't stream very much of this game. And it was because there were too many curse words involved for me to stream it and keep us a family-friendly channel. Because I dropped some aggressive curse words when I was playing this game. Poor producer Kyle.
I think... whatever castle it was that I just streamed, and I was stuck on it for like an hour, and it was just like, oh my god, because it was the Kameks that are just randomly spawning, but not like...
Yeah, and you'd kill one, but they'd come back.
Yeah, well, and that's the whole, this thing, if this game has the, when you leave the screen and come back, the enemies come back.
Yes, which was beneficial sometimes, because when the stupid Koopas that had the feathers on their back, they would respawn, which was helpful. But beyond that, it was annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... I mean, I dropped some... I was very angry at a lot of this. I rage quit this game at least twice while playing it, because I was just, I can't do this anymore. I just can't do it.
No, that was that castle when I was streaming, and I think it was one of those, like, drop the controller... drop your head into your hands and be like, I'm out.
I'm out. I just need a break. I need a break. I need to breathe a little and not get angry. Like, there were a number of times where I'd get... one of the other tropes I was debating about for this game was bad hitboxes. Because there were times, I swear to goodness, that I definitely didn't get hit by something. Or I hit something and instead it hit me or something. And I was like...
Yeah, like you'd come in at a weird angle and like, the boxes didn't align. It was frustrating in certain parts.
Oh, so frustrating.
And I know a lot of that, like, you could tell that, like, it's all pattern-based. Like, it's all... So that's why speedrunners love these types of games. Because you could get those.
Absolutely.
But it drives me crazy.
Oh my god, it was brutal at times. So I think at this point, let's talk about scores. Chris, what's your final score for Super Mario World, a.k.a. Super Mario Brothers 4?
I'm going to give it an 8. I know there's a very good game in there, and it is. 8 is a good score, but I suck at platformers. So there were times where I was just not having a good time. So that's why it's not. There are people that love this game. I just suck at platformers. So
fair enough.
What about you? What is your score?
I'm gonna give it an 8.5 because I really liked it. I got I wouldn't have necessarily beaten the game as quickly as I did if it weren't for save states, but I think I could have gotten there in the long run if I didn't have save states. And I definitely was
Well, it would take you more time because you would just,
But I'm better than I was as a kid, and so I could enjoy more of the game than I ever did as a kid. So
I mean,
I gave it an eight. That's what I'm saying. You gave it a 9 for the rose.
Wow.
So, we both gave it 9s for the rose. I predicted a 9, and Chris predicted an 8.5. For, like, the first time ever, Chris not only predicted lower than me, he's scoring it lower than me. It's not the first time, but it's very rare that Chris scores a game lower than I do.
I think part of it, I was on a time crunch too.
Yeah.
So,
but the nostalgia was still a huge factor of why I like this game so much.
Yeah.
It just triggered so many things in my brain. But I genuinely like when I got a level, it was very satisfying.
No, I mean,
it was like
the
game is awesome. It's
got very good fundamentals. The level design is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Love the different exits. Love all of the secrets. There's so much depth to this game.
Mm-hmm.
I just suck at platformers and was in a hurry. So take that. An 8 out of 10. What
Fair
a horrible,
enough.
Horrible score. In modern video game parlance, that's like a 2.
It really is. but overall, I don't know a lot of people who haven't at least seen this game. If they've not played it, play the game if you have a chance. It's everywhere. Like I said, it's on
everywhere.
The Switch, it's on the Wii, it's on 3DS, it's on the SNES Classic. Play it. It's so much fun.
It's where Yoshi came from. Like,
it's where Yoshi originated. Our Yoshi-osh. He's a favorite of this household. We have so many Yoshis in our household. So many Yoshis. So play this game. We had a lot of fun. I might play it more to try to get more exits. I did play it after I beat it and got like one of the Switches after I beat it. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention about the Switches. The Switches were added to the game as a way of A, adding some variety, but B, they were considered a difficulty meter. So it was like, if you want to be harder, don't add switches.
Don't add the switches.
But if you need it to be easier, find the switches, and it makes the game easier because it fills gaps in. It gives you more items and stuff like that. Well, that's a really clever way of adding a difficulty meter without having to pick at the beginning of the game, easy, medium, hard.
Yeah, that's super interesting to think
about
it that way.
The only switch I had throughout the whole game until after I beat Bowser was the yellow switch, which you get like automatically, basically, like you can just walk over
pretty much. Yeah, I know the green switch you need like a key and some
the green switch, you got everything else you have to find. I didn't get any other switch before beating Bowser except for yellow, so there you go. But anyways, it was a great game, had a lot of fun. You should play it. So Chris, all that said, now that we're done with Mario Month, though we're gonna keep playing Mario games, let's not kid ourselves, but now that we're done with Mario Month, what's our next game that we're covering?
We are heading west. Well, I guess I'm heading west. You're right.
I'm heading north.
You're heading north. It's going to be Oregon Trail.
Yay!
For the PC. We'll probably try to play both versions of the game, I'm sure, because it's not a particularly long game.
No.
So I can't wait to die of dysentery.
I'm so excited to die of fording the river and getting swept away. So I'm looking forward to it.
So we will definitely be streaming this game again. We say this every month, but we'll try to be a little bit better of streaming stuff. You can find
us on
Twitch.
We were pretty good with Super Mario World.
Yeah, we were. So you can find us on Twitch at GWGW Show. You can find us on Facebook at GWGW Show
or Instagram
So most of these social media places, most of the podcasting platforms, obviously that's how you found us here. Thank you guys so much for listening, following us on Twitch, talking with us. It's so cool to hang out with you guys and talk, and we wouldn't do this without you, because then it would just be Katie and I talking to ourselves, which we don't have to spend time to record.
And we appreciate everyone who gives us ratings on Apple and Spotify. On Spotify, there's now a Q&A section. So any comments or questions you have there, we're happy to answer. So please keep doing that. Love seeing that stuff. Also, thank you to our producers who keep us in line and make sure we're getting things done in a timely manner. So it's thanks to them that these episodes are coming out in a relatively timely manner. So thank you very much, guys. So thank you very much, everybody. Again, hang out with us at GWGW Show on Twitch or any of our social media platforms. If you message us, we'll message you back. We love talking to you all. So hope everyone had a great Mario month. Hope maybe you picked up some Mario games in the process because there were some good sales out there. But otherwise, say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Boop, 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 boop.
Did Tanuki Mario have the giant?
No.
Will that probably be cut out of the episode? Yes.
Yes.